So you've been analysing some of the photos of the dingo fence taken from space. Just how visible is the difference in vegetation on either side of this fence?
Yeah, well, that's one of the interesting things, I suppose, is that at certain points in time, there's a very, very clear difference between the vegetation. And at other points in time, it's the same. So this is a very arid part of Australia. It's part of the Strzelecki Desert. And I was only looking at that part of the dingo fence. And that's because that part of the fence, that's part of it where there's the same type of vegetation on both sides of the fence. So we would expect any differences to be due to the fence and the lack of dingoes on one side of the fence. So what we ended up discovering was that when it rains out there and you get some growth of the vegetation inside the dingo fence where there are more kangaroos, the grasses on the ground don't grow as much as outside the fence. So there's a grazing effect, but it's only really apparent when you have some rainfall and you get some grass growth. And most of the time, when it's very dry and arid, or in the drought when it gets even more arid, you don't really see much of a difference because there's not enough grass and the kangaroos are struggling in those conditions. So really, it was only because we had this long look. 32 years of satellite imagery that we were able to see these periods of drought and periods of rainfall. So back in 2010-11, there was a really big rainfall event, and we were able to see how, following the millennial drought, this rainfall event caused a lot of grasses to grow, and then we saw the effect of the grazing animals on those grasses.
It's hard to imagine sort of one of our favorite animals can be so destructive. And I guess, you know, it's hard to blame necessarily the native animals themselves. This really is a big indication of human beings' impact doing these kinds of things that really shift the shape of the landscape.
Yeah, that's right. And this sort of phenomena is happening all over the world. In lots of places, it's hard to measure because there's not a contrast like we have here. The dingo fence really provides a natural experimental setting that we can see a landscape with predators and a landscape without predators, and or without the apex predator. And when you remove that top predator from a system, whether it's dingoes in Australia or wolves in America or in Europe, then it changes everything. It changes the way the medium and small predators, carnivores, operate, and it changes the way their prey and the grazing animals operate, and that affects the vegetation. And that can even affect the landscape. So my colleagues here at the University of New South Wales, some of them have even discovered that the dunes in the desert have a different shape to them on the inside of the dingo fence to on the outside, because the vegetation is different. That's allowing the sand to move around in a different way, and that's causing the dunes to actually be a different shape. So we're seeing this effect flowing on to lots of different aspects of the landscape.
So what are the thoughts on conservation in an area like this? I mean, should we be reintroducing dingoes as an alpha predator south of the fence, or culling kangaroos? I mean, what's the sort of thought in terms of conservation here?
Yeah, I guess it's a bit of a tricky problem, and because the fence has been there and dingoes are controlled, or wild dogs, as they're called a lot of the time, are controlled so heavily inside the dingo fence because of the sheep farming, then it's a tricky proposition to suddenly say, oh, we're not going to control the dingoes, we're going to allow dingoes to exist, and that will address some of the biodiversity conservation issues. So I guess there has to be some sort of balance here, and we would like to see some predators in conservation reserves and national parks and so forth. But perhaps there does have to still be some control of dingoes in farming land. Or I guess what you suggested there, rather than allowing dingoes, is if we controlled kangaroos with more kangaroo harvesting and we could be marketing kangaroo meat more heavily, that would help with this grazing issue, but it wouldn't necessarily help with some of the other conservation issues. So what my colleagues have found is that in the area outside where there are dingoes, there's less kangaroos, but there is also less foxes and less cats because of the apex predator has a role in controlling those smaller predators in the ecosystem. And because those smaller predators are and the feral predators are controlled a bit more, there actually are more native marsupials. So in South Australia, there are a lot more of these vulnerable marsupials, which are very difficult to find in New South Wales. Mm. And in fact, they're reintroducing some into predator-proof exclosures in New South Wales at the moment to try to do that. Just controlling kangaroos wouldn't necessarily help those little animals because the foxes and cats would still be. So I think... what we would like to see really is, I guess, the value of the biodiversity in these areas would be taken into account whenever people are considering the sort of cost benefit of these things. Mm. So there's a cost to having the fence and to controlling dingoes and culling kangaroos. And there's a benefit in that we can farm a lot of sheep and the farmers can produce wool and meat, but there's also a benefit to not doing that and to allowing dingoes to control things and restore some balance into the ecosystem. So I think at the moment it's almost like the biodiversity doesn't have a concrete value compared to the farming.
Mm. Well, Adrian, we will have to leave it there, but thank you. Do appreciate you unpacking this one for us just a little bit this morning.
No worries. Nice to talk, Sean.